You're listening to The Nature of Things. This episode from January 27th, 1984, discusses the positives of winter that biostatisticians don't always catch.
Hi, I'm John Weeks, and this is The Nature of Things, a program about the world we live in, sponsored by FM 90 and the Rice Creek Field Station, a unit of the State University College at Oswego. I've always been a fan of the biostatisticians. After all, they provided for years the information that I use for teaching. And I think they kind of missed the boat on winter. They're a strange breed, always searching for a meaningful measure of the ebb and flow of life. It was one of their fraternity who discovered that the fortunes of the lynx were directly related to the fortunes of the varying and Arctic hare. He discovered that by examining the fur take records of the Hudson's Bay Company. Another, maybe it was the same man, discovered that the fortunes of the hare were cyclic, with 10-year peaks and valleys, linked to God knows what. Another contributed the information that in times of low population density, the ruff grouse averages 2 or 3 eggs per nest more than at other times. Nevertheless, in measuring winter, the statistician somehow misses completely the essence of the season. Perhaps it's because the statistician measures the wrong things, or perhaps it's because the essence of winter is in its contradiction and paradoxes. Biologically, winter is the low point, demanding enormous energy output, but guaranteeing little except the minimum of life support. Its numbers are all too low. Food reserves dwindle every day. Temperatures plummet. Population figures wane. The life curve dips toward the low point. A winter walk, however, is a most invigorating thing. The heart pumps, the pulse quickens, and the vital juices flow. The colors are cool, often cold, but wind and sun working on the medium of snow sculpture and reshape the landscape in a most comely fashion. Scars and gashes disappear. The harsh, geometric forms of man's design are often softened and rounded. Any bit of color stands out. A cardinal becomes a bird of fire. A blue jay, a fluttering bit of heaven. Too romantic, you may say. Winter is still all cold and snow and ice and aching sacroiliac to me. Amen to that. But even that has its point that biostatisticians miss. In winter, we're never at a loss for conversation, and the deeper the snow and blow, the better the word flow. I've made that point before, that the great blizzard of 66 and the great snowfall of 1958 and 59 had a humanizing effect on Oswegonians. So many people were stranded partway home and forced to put up with strangers at least overnight during the 1958-59 storm that it really changed the community. I made it home, but two teachers from the psychology department at Oswego were forced to use our house as a way station. Until that day, we'd been acquainted, nodding and saying hi across the campus, but we never really knew each other. By the time they had left the next morning to hike the remaining miles to their homes, we had established a whole new relationship which persisted for many years. The blizzard of 1966 started early Sunday morning and found most people at home. Even so, being pinned down as we were for nearly a week served to strengthen neighborhood ties. We met in groups in various homes. We shared food, information, and even confidences. It was like group therapy. Try to imagine that happening on any other season. Another comfort which we tend to associate with deep and forbidding winter is the comfort of the hearthside. It's so good to warm the soles of the feet as the snow descends. That's a newly discovered comfort for many whose houses were devoid of hearth until they recently installed a standing fireplace or a Franklin stove. Sometimes it follows up the well-designed heating system, and it's made a good split of oak as scarce and expensive as a good pork chop. But it does something for the soul that money seldom can. And then there is the whole business of winter sports. The snowmobile fraternity had discovered the 26-hour winter day. When don't they run those things? When there's no snow, of course. Likewise, the cross-country skier and even the snowshoer have joined the downhill skier in a whole new winter adventure. Beaver Lake on the weekend resembles a ski resort. The industry and the commerce involved in all this is significant, and many a home is warmed and pantry filled by the proceeds. All this may be somewhat dismaying to the wildlife who thought they owned the winter after all. Imagine the discomfort of the deer who finds his boudoir invaded at 1:30 a.m. or 2:30 p.m. I'm not sure which is worse. Imagine the dismay of the poor field mouse who finds his tunnel from bedroom to lunch counter severed by a pair of hickory staves propelled by 200 pounds of humanity. I'm not sure how I feel about all that. As the value of a split of good oak increases, the abundance of good oak trees may decrease. The more the mechanized hordes see of wildlife, the less I may see it. Traveling at 25 or 35 miles per hour, they have a distinct advantage over me plodding along at a tenth that speed. But then, I think, my goal is to get people to enjoy nature, so I guess I'd better look at the ski and the snowshoe, and yes, even the snowmobile, as an ally in that cause. Just travel with care, will you? And oh yes, keep away from my backyard, especially at 1:30 a.m. This is John Weeks saying that's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.